relate to our husbands and why he said in the beginning he had created us. You remember back in Genesis 2:18, he said there that it is not good that man should be alone. And then we remembered at that time that God took a rib from the man and he created the woman. He created her so that she could be a helper mate to her husband, so that she could complement him, she could fulfill him, she could be the finishing touches to him that he could not be in himself. In other words, the woman had something to offer and to complete the man that he could not be in himself. Okay, now if God designed the woman to do this, this means that as she's doing this, she will be fulfilled as well as her husband being fulfilled. So thinking of that, we can say, okay, since I was designed to meet needs in my husband's life, I will be fulfilled by so doing it and reap bonuses from my husband as well as for the Lord, then my husband should be top priority in my life, since that's the way I was designed to function. This is reaffirmed in Ephesians 5:23-24. There we read, "For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, himself the Savior of his body. As the church is subject to Christ, so let wives also be subject in everything to their husbands." So I think it's so exciting to look at this diagram and realize that the exact parallel between Christ and the believer are the church, that same exact parallel is lived out on planet Earth between the husband and the wife. You see, God said this relationship between man and woman is so sacred, so precious, and so wonderful that I'm going to compare it and relate it directly to my relationship, Jesus Christ's relationship to the believer or the church. And he said every parallel between Christ and the church or the believer is exactly true in the husband-wife relationship. So if at any time you're in doubt as to how to relate to your husband, think back. How do I, as a Christian, relate to Jesus Christ? Okay, then we as wives have it easy. We don't have to switch roles like the man does, being submissive to Christ and then leader of the home. We have the same role to play in exactly the same way as we are totally and completely submissive and dependent upon Jesus Christ in our spiritual inner life in this invisible relationship. Then we are exactly to respond to our husbands in exactly the same way in our earthly, physical, human relationships and activities. Isn't that neat? And then it's like that invisible relationship between the Christ and the believer is lived out on planet Earth, the stage being your home, of living out in a tangible, visible way exactly what's taken place between you and Jesus Christ. So just as you are totally dependent upon Christ, then you will prove that you're totally dependent upon Christ by putting your husband first in your human, visible, tangible, earthly relationships and activities. And it's in this way that Jesus Christ is glorified. Titus 2:4-5, I believe we had that the first lesson, said that this is the way that Jesus Christ is honored and glorified, is that the husband is adapting and subordinating herself to her husband. So you prove that Jesus Christ is first, is the power to give you the strength to bring the real you out, to enable you to put your husband first in your human activities and relationship, therefore manifesting that Jesus Christ is first in your spiritual life. 1 Corinthians 7:34, we had that the first time too, says this same principle, that the married woman's cares are to be centered in earthly things, how she may please her husband. So you're pleasing Jesus Christ. You're putting Christ first in your inner life, spiritual life, invisible life, by putting your husband first in your tangible, visible, human relationships and activities. because he clearly outlines that that's the way that he blesses us. That's the plan that he set up to bless us, not only to bless us, but to train our children and teach them how to fill their proper roles when they are married, as well as to teach others in the world the relationship between the believer and Christ. So they observe that as they daily watch you relating to your husband and putting him first in your activities. Now, it's very easy, because we have been contaminated by sin for a period of years, depending on how long it's been that you were a non-Christian or a natural man without Christ, or maybe a carnal person just not trusting Jesus Christ. Those period of years contaminate you and warp your way of thinking and responding and dull your seeing reality. So it's easy to not respond to life situations and to get our lives out of balance and not put our husbands first in the way that would glorify Jesus Christ. So we're going to talk about some areas that are good, legitimate areas of our lives. This diagram is in your book if you cannot find it or see it very clearly on the overhead projector. It's the wheel diagram in the chapter entitled Not Second Best. And the areas we're going to be talking about for a while this morning are areas, as I said, that are good and legitimate, and they're important areas of our lives. But it's so easy for us to get off balance, and the wheel representing the balanced life of the wife and showing that her husband or her hubby is to be the hub of her life. And when he's the hub of her life, then all runs smoothly and all the other areas fit into proper balance. But when she allows some spoke or area of her life to become the hub, then it causes her life to wobble and maybe crash as it rolls along. So we want to look at these to be careful that we do not get them out of the perspective that God would have us to have them in. The first area, the area of homemaking, is easy for some ladies to get out of balance. And realizing, using this scale diagram of the balances, that God wants our lives to be balanced. He wants Jesus Christ to be the center of our spiritual life, the power that enables us to be the true woman he's designed us to be. And that's balanced out by putting your husband first in your human activities and relationship. But taking the area of housekeeping, it's easy sometimes for some women to have their house so clean. Well, I guess we could say too clean. So clean that she's so obsessed with the cleanliness of it that the moment her husband or her children come in, she's saying, "Don't you step there. Don't you sit there. Don't you touch that." And on until the place is not a prepared place for their enjoyment and their refuge to just relax and be someplace that they can come from the tension and the hurriedness of the world and be restored and rebuilt to go back out into the world. But it's a cage in which they are afraid to sit or touch or walk or do anything. And so, of course, that's going to an extreme that does not glorify Jesus Christ and is defeating the purpose of the home. The home is to be enjoyed by those people, not to be the center of the existence. Well, of course, the other extreme is true when the house is just total chaos. When you cannot find anything, he has to kick things out of the way to even get through the house possibly and do a total moving job before he can even sit down on the sofa. And that does not glorify Jesus Christ either. In 1 Corinthians, the 14th chapter, in the 33rd verse, there we see, "For he is not a God of confusion and disorder, but one of peace and order." So that it would be God's will that we have our houses well organized, a place for everything, and to learn that it's easier to put that thing in its place when you're using it, putting it back there, rather than setting it down and having to pick it up later. My husband is quite faithful to teach me these lessons, and I'm slowly learning them. That it is easier to put things in their places when they where they should go. So a good checklist for me to realize, am I keeping my home in its proper balance and my husband is number one, is realizing if my house is good enough for my husband to come home to, since he's number one in my life, then it's clean enough for anyone to come home to. Company, guests, friends, relatives, anyone, because they are not as important as our husbands, right? Since our husbands are the most important, then if it's clean enough for them, then no matter who walks in, you will not apologize. Because did you apologize when your husband came home? So I keep this as a checklist, and it's, you know, every time I teach this course, I vow I'll never teach it again. Because I have the wonderful opportunity of learning the lessons in greater depth than I ever dreamed possible. And this particular lesson, I'm constantly seeing if I really do believe what I teach. Not too long ago, it was my birthday, and it happened to come on Thursday. And that particular Thursday, I had taught a class such as this and had gone home and intended to vacuum. It was the time, and there was crumbs here and there on the kitchen floor, and I was reminded that I should do that. But I talked myself into giving myself a special birthday present and taking a nap instead, which is exactly what I did. Well, of course, it went through my mind. Now, if your house is clean enough for your husband to come home to, then it's clean enough for anyone. And I wasn't real sure of that, but I finally decided, yes, it is clean enough for my husband, and so, okay, Lord. Well, DeWitt had said, don't bother to fix supper because I'm going to take you out tonight for your birthday. Well, just as we were fixing to leave, all these people started coming in. He had planned a surprise birthday party at our house, and he, of course, had the food done, brought it in, and so forth. But I thought, well, Lord, you continue to help me to really believe this lesson, don't you? So I hope you're having that same opportunity. But realize that your home is to be a prepared place. It's to be a prepared place for your husband and your children to come home to enjoy, and that will help you to keep it in the proper balance. Okay, another area is the area of children. God has designed the area of children to be a real blessing in our homes. Psalms 127, 3 through 5 remind us, lo, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward. So God allows children to come into our home to be a real reward, a real blessing in your life, in your husband's life. But it will become a cursing rather than a blessing if we first of all do not raise these children according to God's principles in His Word. But second of all, if we allow these children to take priority in our lives over our husbands. Our husband must be first. Now, this does not mean you neglect your children. When we keep things in the proper order that God has ordained us to, there will always be time to do the other things. But many things we do for our children are really not necessary. As well as activities and work at home, we maybe ought to be training them to do some of the things, the chores in the home that they could be doing for themselves, as well as some places they go are not absolutely essential. So we need to evaluate. Have I been putting my children first or my husband? And that you're doing a disservice to your children if you're putting them first over and above your husband. If the husband is first, then he will not be resentful of the children. But if they're taking his place in your life, he could become resentful to them. And it could break down the relationship between the daddy and the children that should be there because all's just not right between you and your husband. The greatest gift that you can give to your children is to be a good wife to your children's father. And see, this carries on over many times. If a woman has poured her life into her children as opposed to her husband, and sometimes this happens, communication breaks down, they're not getting along, and so rather than take care of the problem and solving it the way God would have them to, they simply ignore that problem and start living their lives through their children. And, of course, this is a great, great disservice to the children as well as it destroys the husband-wife relationship. Then when the children are gone, they realize suddenly that they have grown apart and the husband and wife no longer even know each other because they've lived their lives for the children. And maybe they still try to live their lives through their children and cause in-law problems. So it's important right now to put it in its proper perspective and realize that your priorities are to be your husband, and then the children will fit in a natural way. Another area is the area of appearance.
It's very easy after you get married and get involved in taking care of children and the household obligations and responsibilities as well as privileges to let some areas slide and just begin to take for granted areas that you would never ever take for granted when you were dating. I dare say that when you were dating and your husband came to the door to greet you, that you would have never arrived at the door until you had adequately fixed your hair, put on some makeup, and had fresh clothing on. Is the same still true now when your husband comes home from work? If it's not, you're beginning to take an area for granted that is not good to build a happy marriage. Set your alarm clock if necessary to go off about 15 minutes before your husband comes home, and then go to your dressing room and freshen up your hair a little bit, maybe put on a little lipstick and maybe put on a fresh blouse. Doesn't mean that you have to go around looking like Miss Hollywood when he comes home. That would be unrealistic. But at least let him know, honey, I was expecting you and I've been looking forward to your coming home. And I freshen up to myself because I want to look nice for your homecoming. Another thing that's easy for us ladies, since we have the privilege of scheduling our day, at least part of it, of setting aside our time and organizing it, to not organize it sometimes exactly the way we should, and to let our time slip by so that when our husbands come home, we have not scheduled our time so that we can just sit down and listen to them. Susan shared with me that she had the type of husband that when he came home from work, he was all wound up very tight. And he really enjoyed her stopping what she was doing, fixing a cup of coffee, and just being available for him to sit and talk and allow her to listen to him. Many times not to say anything, but to sympathetically nod and smile. So if your husband is that type of husband, be sure that you are available to him when he needs you. Remember that your job is to be his helper mate. I shared with a gentleman not too long ago, had taken him one of my books to give to his wife, and as we were sitting there, tears came in his eyes, and he said, "This title really disturbs me because I'm not a happy husband." And he said, "I'm making plans to move out of our home. My wife doesn't know it at this point." But as we continued to talk, he said, "You know, what I would love more than anything is for my wife just to be available to do what I want to do when I want to do it, just to be available to be with me. But she never is. I will come home and I'll say, 'Hun, let's go out to eat.' And she says, 'What about the children? I can't leave them.' She will never get a babysitter and leave them to go out with me. Or maybe some afternoon I would come home and I'd just be in the mood to go out and treat her on the town. Maybe she already has supper prepared and on the stove. But I would love for her to just put the lids on everything and say, 'Give me 2 minutes to freshen up and I'll be ready to go.' Realizing, well, maybe that supper will be ruined, but the relationship she's developing between she and her husband is far greater than the money and time she's put into that meal." He said, "Oh, if she would just be available to go and do and be with me when I want her to, but she never is." So it's unfortunate that we forget our first love, our first priority many times. Another friend shared with me this last week that many times just being with her husband meant quite the opposite to what the little woman's doing. The little woman standing here in the store, looking over the perfume counter to the clerk there and saying, "I want something strong enough to take his mind off of football." So the idea is not to get something strong enough to divert him, but to join in with him in whatever he's doing and help him to enjoy it more because he's married to you. And Janet, as I was talking to her last week, she said, "You know, it was a long time before I learned to go to the garage. My husband had wanted me to go to the garage as he did exciting things like grinding down valves and putting in spark plugs and all those things, and to stand there where the mosquitoes bite my legs and enjoy just being with him. But," she said, "now that I've realized that that is God's will for my life, I'm doing it and most of the time really enjoying it." And she said, "I'm finding that it does play such rich dividends. If occasionally I have to leave the dishes to come be with him, that he will in turn come back and help me. And there's a closeness there in our relationship that could have never been developed if I had planned and schemed to try to bring it off. Another thing in our timing is, how do you plan the activities that you have, the outings, the things that you do? Do you plan these things because you know your husband really wants to do them, or is it because it's something you want to do? Here's the little woman. Her husband has a telephone call. He's holding the telephone in his hand and evidently asking his wife, let's go, such and such. And she immediately says, you know we can't go tonight. We have a date with Channel 13. So she's making their decisions on the basis of what turns her on, rather than just being available to do and be what her husband would like to be. So that does not come natural for any of us. But we know that being the woman God has designed us to be will be natural through his supernatural power in us, and that's the only way. Another area that sometimes gives problems is the area of in-laws. Now again, God has prepared for every aspect of your life, allowing none to be unprepared for. And when he created Adam and Eve in the very beginning, there were no in-laws. But he knew the problem could arise in later generations, so he made provision for it right then. In Genesis 2:24, we read, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall become united and cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. The problem that we have with most in-laws is a result of the husband and wife not doing what that verse says, of leaving mother and father. The wife must realize that when she marries, she is leaving the authority of her parents, and she's now under a new authority. There's someone new that is the center of her life and her priorities. It's now her husband. And the husband must realize that he's now leaving the authority of his parents, and he's now becoming the authority in his own home, and that God's holding him responsible for that. Many times, husbands feel that they have to compete with their in-laws. Their wives say, but Dad would have done it such and such, or Mom says we ought to do so and so. And they get the idea that you think they're not very smart, and that your mom and dad have made the wisest decisions, and they no longer feel in control, and they feel like they're in competition to your parents. But if you say, honey, I realize that God will guide me through you, and I realize I'm now under your authority, and you are my first priority, then as you're rightly relating to your husband, then he will love the parents that gave him such a wonderful wife. So it's when we keep it in the right perspective that it's beautiful, and the in-laws really are a blessing. Ephesians 6, 2 through 3 remind us there that as long as you live, those two verses still apply to you in the parent-child relationship, in that when you leave them, you are no longer to obey them, as verse 1 says, but 2 and 3 says you're to honor and respect them. And that happens as long as you live, that you will relate to his parents as well as your parents in a way of honoring and respecting them. This may mean that sometimes you will go to them and take advantage of their counseling. They've had many years of experience that you have not had. So as you go to them and say, we're doing such and such and such and such, we would appreciate your insights into this, then it doesn't mean that you have to obey, but it means you could consider it, and you will be respectful in taking their advice and saying, you know, Mom, I really appreciate your concern in this manner. Jake and I will talk it over and see what we decide, or however. But as you keep it in that proper perspective, then you will find that they can really be a blessing. And many times the reasons that in-laws present a problem is that they want to be a part of your life, and they want to feel needed, and they simply feel left out. And you can help them to feel included by sharing with them things you're doing. visiting with them as often as possible. If you live a good many miles away, write them frequent newsy letters of saying what your grandchildren, their grandchildren have been doing, and keeping them up on the news so that they will feel needed and included. One lady said that she wrote on her husband's birthday a thank you note to her mother-in-law. And in this thank you note, she simply said, you know, on this particular day, I was reminded that you gave birth to my husband. And I was reminded of all the many hours and days and nights that you give of yourself unselfishly to just help him to grow and mature into the wonderful husband I have today. And so I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for all the loving care that you've done and the wonderful husband that you've given to me personally. She said that the mother-in-law wrote back saying, you know, I've waited for that letter all of my life, and that it gave them a bond and a closeness that they never, ever had before. So realize that by and large, people just need to feel needed, and as you include them, it gives a closeness there that can be no other way. Okay, another area that many times causes problems is the area of money and security. Particularly this is hard, I think, in the woman's life unless she keeps her focus absolutely right. It's easy to begin to put your security in your husband's position, in his job, or in a bank account, rather than just in the Lord. And God reminds us in Proverbs 11:28 from the Living Bible what happens when we do that. Trust in your money and down you go. Trust in God and flourish as a tree. So you see, if you have been, for instance, your husband may come in and he's saying, I have just got a promotion, but this promotion means that we will move to another state. Well, immediately, if you've been putting your security and your happiness in your friends, in the place you live, and the circumstances around you, immediately you may forget that your husband is first priority and resist leaving. You might say, well, I'm not going, rather than how long do I have to pack? So realizing that when your attitude is not one of just fitting into your husband's plans, or maybe he wants to go into business for himself, and you realize how very, very shaky that is, and that he could lose everything that you've saved up, and so you do not support him, but instead you resist. And you encourage him to hang on in a job that he hates and that is just killing him alive every day. Rather than saying, honey, whatever you feel is best, I'm willing to stand behind you because I believe in you. As you support him, you bring out the best. Now, it may mean that you'll have some rough times together. God never promises that it'll be all a bed of roses. But he promises, as you respond rightly, that he will work together in this husband-wife relationship to develop a relationship far more valuable than any money or security. But if we don't react rightly, we can kill his incentive and just destroy a relationship there that God wants us to have. Okay, another area that I want us to talk about that is easy to get out of its proper perspective is the area of personal activities. Now, these personal activities may involve many, many things. It may be your hobbies, your ceramic club, ceramic activities, your painting, your writing, or it might be civic activities or benevolent services or church activities. Whatever you do in your spare time as your hobby, or what you do in your spare time after your obligations or your privileges of being a wife and mother are fully taken care of. Those are the things I'm talking about. Now, it's very easy to get these out of perspective. Now, many women erroneously, as they sit in one of my classes, say, oh, I could never be that way. If I did what that lady was saying, it would squelch my individuality, and it would just, I can see this person is just being a doormat. Well, you see, that person is deceived by Satan, and they're not seeing God's best for them, because the plan that God has designed for you and I is designed to allow the real you to emerge, for your individuality to be expressed in a unique, real way, but never at the expense of you and your husband's happiness, but as a blessing, a bonus that will bless you and him also when it's kept in the proper perspective. But it's easy for us to get these things out of balance. And maybe something you're doing is really good and exciting, but when your husband comes home, that's all he hears you talking about. He sees ceramic stuff laid out all over every place. And that's all you talk about the whole time he's home and you're on the phone with a friend, what we're going to do and so forth. Well, what can he conclude by what's most important to you except by what he sees you doing and what he hears you saying? So he begins to conclude then that these things are more important to you than he is. So you see, ladies, we simply have to keep our hobbies, our activities, the things that we do that express your own unique individuality. You're to do them, but you must keep them in the proper perspective. Now, an area that I find so many times is ignored, and I found that I was not taught on it personally, and it's the reason that I think it's so important to bring it out in a course like this, particularly in the setting that it's in, and because there's so many Christian women here that have made the same mistakes over and over, to bring out that many times what happens if a man and woman are married, and let's say they're both non-Christians, the beautiful truths you're talking about, it's foreign to him because he is not a Christian, and only a Christian can understand them. So you see, many times the wife will immediately say, "Well, honey, I can no longer go so-and-so with you, and I can no longer do such-and-such, but instead I'm going to be at the church every time it opens." Now, she may not say that. She's just there every time it opens, and she's never available to him to go where he needs to go, to eat supper with him or whatever. Well, then he begins to conclude, something's happening to my wife that I don't understand what's happening. And she's talking about somebody that I don't know or have never met, and he feels threatened, he feels left out, he feels he's losing the most important thing in his life, his wife. Not only is he losing her, he doesn't understand what's happening in her life. And as ridiculous as it might sound to you and might sound to me, it's as if you're having an affair with someone else as far as he's concerned. He's lost you to something else, to someone else that he knows nothing about and doesn't have a part of. And he will begin to fight back to try to gain you back because he's threatened and he's hurt and he feels rejected and frustrated. And you see, what happens is when a woman does those things, instead of drawing her husband to Jesus Christ, she repels him from Christ. He is turned off by him because she's made the wrong things the issues. Maybe she has refused to go a certain place or to do a certain thing that they previously had fun doing. And he then concludes that becoming a Christian means giving up this and not doing that. And those things are fun to him, and he doesn't want to give them up. And so he concludes, "Oh, I don't want to know Jesus." And so instead of being drawn to Jesus, he's repelled and wants no part of him because he doesn't understand what's happening. And so the woman must understand that in 1 Peter 3:1-2, that those verses there are saying how a woman wins her husband to the Lord. The first verse there in 1 Peter 1 says that she is to be submissive to him if he does not listen to the word of God. That means he's not a Christian. And she wins him by her manner of life. Not quoting scripture and having all these pamphlets and everything lying around. He opens the refrigerator and there's one. He turns down his bed and there's one. Not by all of those things, but he is won by her manner of life. Did you notice it says without a word? Oh, that's hard for us, isn't it? To live it rather than talk it? I'd much rather talk it, wouldn't you? But God says live it before him. A woman that's becoming fun to be around. She makes every activity that they have together so much more fun than it was before. She's fun to be around. She's not moping, pouting, nagging, criticizing like she used to. She doesn't fall apart when I don't come home at 6 o'clock for supper anymore. She still loves me and accepts me exactly the way I am when I come home at 3. Why, this woman is fantastic to be around. She's not caught up in all the fears and anxieties that she used to be. And, all the time just a nervous, jittering mess. She's a relaxed, stable woman, fun to be around. And because she's so much fun to be around, he wants to be around her more. And he's enjoying her company because she now is really being the wife that she was designed to be. His needs are met, and they're being drawn together in a closeness. So one day in sharing, he may say, "Honey, your life has changed so much. Could you share with me what's made the difference?" And then you can in love say, "Yes, 10 months ago, I understood that I did not have the power to be the wife to you that I should be. And I realized that I was separated by God with sin in my life. So I accepted Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. And now He has come into my life to be to me now the power to be to you the woman you deserve to be all this time. And I didn't have the power to be on my own." And then his response might be, "Well, say if he could do that for you, reckon he could do it for me." See, he will be won over because he's seen it living in his life, in your life, there daily as an exposure. Now, this very same thing can be true. Maybe your husband's a Christian, but you've decided he's just not spiritual enough. You've decided he needs to pray a little bit more and he needs to read the Bible a whole lot more, and he doesn't know half the spiritual truths you do, so therefore it's your job to teach him. So therefore, you can turn him off and alienate your relationship just as equal as much as that other person can do so with her husband that's a non-Christian. Realize the truths that God has taught you are to be lived in your life before your husband. Now, this doesn't mean that if he asks you something that you cannot in love share with him. But just be careful that you don't preach to him and try to change him, and that that's not the reason you're sharing with him a spiritual truth. Because if you do, then it will alienate the two. I know Jim shared with me one day, I knew that he and Sally had gotten a divorce, and I was very close to the situation, and I had heard only her side of the story. And I shared with him, "Would you share with me why you never wanted any part of church and the activities that your wife was so much a part of?" He said, "Yes, I'll gladly share." Said, "Never ever was she available for me. I knew I was never ever important to her life. The whole time I was at home, she never felt like doing anything. She complained about how badly she felt. I wanted her to feel good, so I hired a maid to come in at least 1 or 2 days a week so that she could feel better. But invariably, when I would come home, she would be at the church or someplace just working her fingers to the bone, helping there. But at home, she never felt like doing anything. And so, therefore, I wanted a part, no part of any of that. I could not see a living reality in her life, and I wanted nothing to do with it." So, you see, it's important that we keep it in the perspective God would have us to. That is, putting our husbands first. He's your mission field. And he's your mission field by living it daily before him. Now, ladies, it does not come easy. I hope you've discovered that by now. I certainly have. And in Proverbs 19, the 14th verse, there we read and are reminded to be the wife that God has designed us to be is really a gift from the Lord. But a wise, understanding, and prudent wife is from the Lord. Realize God's got to do the changing in your life. You cannot change yourself. All you can do is when He shows you sin areas in your life, then you confess them as sin. And then you trust His power to change your thinking, your attitude, your motivation deep down inside, and Him to make the changes in your life, knowing that He's the only one. Then you cooperate by acting and doing and saying what you know He would have you to, trusting His power to help you pull it off, knowing that He will then do the heart surgery and help the feelings to accommodate your actions as He's working in your life. Proverbs 31:10 remind us, "A capable, intelligent, and virtuous woman, who is he who can find her? She is far more precious than jewels, and her value is far above rubies or pearls." Now, I think it's quite significant that the pearl is mentioned here. How is a pearl developed? It's developed by a grain of sand getting into the shell of an oyster, and it causes irritation there. But as that oyster responds to that irritation, a white, milky substance begins to spin around that grain of sand, that irritation. And as it continues to respond, a beautiful pearl, a precious, priceless pearl is developed. The same thing is true in mine and your life. The Christian life is not only difficult, it's impossible. And you and I cannot live it. Only Jesus Christ can live it in and through us. God never ever promises us that the Christian life will be easy, but it's easier than the other life without Him. So as we're responding to life properly, He will develop you into a precious jewel, a pearl, if you please. But again, it's a reconstruction program that is not easy. It takes an act of our will, willingly turning ourselves and going in the right direction. It's like we've talked about here, that when we recognize there's sin in our life, that the old sin nature is controlling us, then we know to confess it and trust Christ's power to be in us. But it's not enough just to confess it. We have to know how God would have us to respond and then go in the right direction with His being our power. It's kind of like a little beetle. Have you ever seen a little ladybug, a beetle, up on its back and its legs just kicking wildly in the air? And you immediately conclude, well, what that beetle needs is to be turned over on its feet. And you do so. And then you see it goes right up the same incline that caused it to fall over again. So you conclude, well, not only does it need to be turned over on its feet, but it needs to be turned in the right direction, so it will not fall over on its back again. The same is true with you and I. Just this last week, the Lord showed me an area in my life that I was totally blind to, and it seems that I have to have pretty hard jolts to knock out old habit patterns in my life. You see, all of us have learned to respond in a wrong way. And because we've learned to respond in a wrong way, sometimes we need a good slapping to get us to see we're going in the wrong direction. And then to establish with an act of our will new habit patterns. So in the beginning, those new habit patterns are with an act of your will. It's like when you first learned to tie a shoe. You had to think, well, I put this string here and this string here, and I pull it this way, and I turn it up in this way. And you consciously went through several steps until you learned to tie a shoe without thinking. So I dare say today you do not think what to do. You just automatically tie it. Well, that's the same way every habit pattern is developed in your life. By, in the beginning, you consciously do it, and then it becomes second nature. Most of our habit patterns are wrong habit patterns, and we have to unlearn them and develop new ones in the same way that we learned them. Well, just this week, I didn't know that I had a habit pattern that was very bad, that I was doing something that God wanted to change in my life. And it took a big jolt for God to show me that I did have this wrong habit pattern and to change it. And immediately I confessed it as sin and set out constructive steps as how I could correct the situation. But it hurt terribly. There was much about the situation that I just felt I was tearing apart inside. And as I was lying there in bed thinking about it, Lord, I just don't understand. It's hurting so bad. And as I was thinking there about it, God reminded me, Doreen, it's like, imagine yourself from your shoulders down below your knees being wrapped in chains. And that those chains may be gradually being wrapped around you. You were not aware that your liberty and your freedom was being hampered. And because those chains so gradually engulfed you, you didn't realize that you were in bondage. Neither did you realize that the circulation was partly being cut off and that your skin was being damaged because it happened so gradual. Now that I've knocked off one of the chains, that tender skin is exposed to the air and circulation is beginning to come back into that skin, and it hurts. But it's a healing hurt. And it's a hurt that is toward liberation because I'm removing the chains that are in bondage. And when I can understand why it hurts, I can accept the hurt a little better. So when it's hurting in your case, realize that it's a healing hurt, that God wants to establish new habit patterns. And that just like in the third lesson we talked about, that God has a formula for helping us in every area of our life. And we talked about Philippians 4, 6, that he wants us to give him our problem. And then verse 8, to focus on the positive things, as he can do heart surgery inside. The seventh verse, to expect his peace. And then number 9, notice there, we're adding number 9, says, now practice it. It doesn't come natural. You will need to practice these things to make them a reality in your life with an act of your will. 1 Timothy 4:7 says, train yourself toward godliness. It's something you must, with an act of your will, train yourself. I didn't feel like responding to DeWitt in the right way. I knew the way that I felt deep down inside was wrong. So I confessed it as sin, and I said to him the things I knew God would have me to say. I put the motions to the things I knew God would have me to say. But you know, it took him a whole 24 hours to do heart surgery so that I felt the same way I was acting. But during that time, I just cried out, God, all I can do is what you have told me to say the right things, to trust you the best I know how. Now, I can't change me inside. You can do that, and only you. So you've got to do it, Lord. I can't. But he did. As I was faithful to let him hold the problem, to focus on positive things, and just expecting his power to flow through me, then in about 24 hours, the feelings accompanied what I knew God was having me to do in my actions. In 2 Chronicles 27:6, Jonathan there says that, so Jonathan grew mighty for he ordered his ways in the sight of the Lord his God. He ordered his ways with an act of his will. You and I must order our ways in God's ways. Proverbs 15:28 says, the mind of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil thoughts. So it's something that you, with an act of your will, must do through Christ's power in you. You cannot do it on your own, only as he's doing it in and through you. One wrong habit pattern that some people may have, and may be one of yours, is a habit pattern that comes from a fruit of the flesh. And this is a habit pattern of jealousy. And the world's way of looking at jealousy sometimes is to say that if your husband is jealous of you or you of him, then that just shows you that he loves you. Of course, that is totally human viewpoint and from Satan. That shows a person that is jealous that they are selfish. It shows that they are looking for things to satisfy themselves rather than being concerned of your happiness. So when you find controlling you the emotion of jealousy, you'll recognize it as what it is, what God calls it, sin, a fruit of the flesh. And you'll recognize that it will destroy you, not only you, but you and your husband's relationship. And that jealousy is denying another a pleasure that draws them away from you. And if you're really concerned about their happiness, you'll want them to do what makes them happy. So Proverbs 6:34 reminds us there of how jealousy affects a person. For jealousy makes man furious. Therefore, he will not spare in the day of vengeance. And then in Proverbs 14, the 30th verse there, we read, a calm and undisturbed mind and heart are the life and health of the body. But envy and jealousy and wrath are as rottenness in the bones. So you see, it will eat you alive like rottenness in your bones, as well as destroy the husband-wife relationship. James 3:16 also brings out how detrimental jealousy is. So when you recognize, say, a wrong habit pattern of jealousy in your own life, you simply confess it as sin, then you say, okay, Father, I'm going to respond to this husband in the way you would have me to. Honey, if it makes you happy to be gone all day long, Saturday playing golf, that I want you to be happy, then inside I will not be jealous of the golf anymore. I'm going to respond to him rightly, trusting God to take care of the heart surgery deep down inside. Another habit pattern that I find so many women are guilty of is the wrong habit pattern of gossip. And maybe they exercise this even in the name of Christianity. Let me tell you about so-and-so so you can pray intelligently about it. And all they're really doing is wanting to pass along a juicy piece of gossip under the disguise of Christianity. And realizing that anything you share about another that tears that person down and makes them look bad is gossip. And God says that we're to have no part of that. Proverbs 26, 20 through 21 reminds us of that, as well as Ephesians 4, 29. So if you get a telephone call this afternoon and you've been involved in this wrong habit pattern and someone starts to share with you a juicy bit of information, you might just say, you know, Sue, this information that you're sharing with me looks too serious for you to share with me. I believe you ought to share with Jane about that personally. And see, that's the way God would have us to settle any differences. If a person has a difference with another, they're to go with that person and settle their differences, not to talk about it to others. So you can be stopping your habit pattern of gossip by just in love saying, you know, this sounds too serious for you to share with me. I believe you should share with Jane personally about this. And you will be helping that other person to stop gossiping possibly also. Now, realizing that, again, how do you change habit patterns? You change them by, first of all, self-examination, asking God to show you through His Spirit if you have any wrong responses, and then daily saying no to them with an act of your will, whether you feel like it or not. And then practice doing and being the way God would have you to through His power in you, realizing that Philippians 4:13 tells you that you can do all things through Christ which strengthens you. And then you might begin praying for that person, that if it's a person involved in this habit pattern, praying for them, that will help get it in the proper perspective. Carol said that it was so exciting in her own husband-wife relationship to see how when she really put her husband first, how God took care of all of her hang-ups. She said, for instance, her husband had always wanted her to entertain on a large scale, and he had been asking her many times to entertain this group of people in his business, which would involve about 100 he wanted her to have for tea. And she just was scared to death to do such a thing. She just knew she couldn't carry it off. But when she realized her husband was to be first, she simply gave her cares to the Lord and said, okay, Lord, you promised to be what I need. And it's evident my husband needs me to do this, so I'm going to trust you to give me the power to do it, help everything to fall into place, and you to take care of it all as I set about to do the different steps that I know you would have me to do. She said the tea came off beautifully. God took care of all my anxieties, and it really went well. Now, first, she had to confess her bitterness. She had been very bitter and resentful of her husband asking her to do things that she felt was unfair. But once she took care of that and just trusted the Lord to work in and through, she said it was beautiful. And my husband and I came together in a closeness that we had never, ever experienced before. So in your assignment for this week, glorify Jesus Christ by putting your husband first in your earthly activities and relationships, realizing that that is the way that He's glorified. And then number two, pray that God will show you any area that is out of balance in your life so that you can begin setting about the constructive ways to correct that. And then read chapter 5 in the book, You Can Be the Wife of a Happy Husband. Then memorize Proverbs 14:30.